Blog Talk Radio.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor, visit cdc.gov/act early, or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for calling in and listening in. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm also on Instagram. Check me out. Lots of great pictures on there. And as I mentioned, always tag me in the photo. You might win a prize, books, iTunes downloads, Starbucks gift cards, all types of things. So definitely follow, check me out on Facebook, tag me on Instagram. I just want to thank you guys for following the show. Again, we're past like 1.2, 1.3 million downloads. Amazing. I can't believe it. It's just ridiculous. But I'm glad that you guys are listening and hopefully learning some new things. Well, this month is Autism Awareness Month, and I wanted to bring on some activists and educators who are dealing with autism in the African American community. A lot of times, as with other health issues, if you will, mental health issues, developmental issues, African Americans are lagging behind in being diagnosed, getting treatment, finding out where they can get help. So I'm just trying to, you know, make these people and their knowledge available to you, and maybe you can spread it along to your friends and family. So hopefully this morning I'm going to have Angela Norris Hawkins. She's a co-founder of the African American Autism Center on, and also Camille Proctor. She is the founder of the Color of Autism Foundation. I'm going to check this line and see if this is one of them here. Good morning. This is Joy Keys.
Hey there, good morning.
Hi, you're
Camille Proctor.
Oh, hi, yes. Camille. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for calling in. I think this is like the third time you've been on the show, maybe.
It has been. You've been with us since almost our inception. So great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and, you know, taking the time out. I know you're busy, you know, with your life and your son and your foundation. So thank you so much for calling in. And hopefully Angela Norris will be calling in as well. But let's just get started here. Let's talk about your organization a little bit, The Color of Autism. Can you talk to the audience about what you do and what you're about?
Yes, absolutely. The Color of Autism is a nonprofit that focuses on persons of color who are on the autism spectrum. One of the most important things that we advocate for is actually full-on family support, because we really embrace that concept of it takes a village. Because, you know, we want to get families completely involved, getting into the early intervention phase, all the way through what it's going to take for their loved one with autism to flourish and be successful in this world. Because autism is just a very variable. When they say it's a spectrum, it really is a spectrum. So it runs the gamut of how someone can be, and we don't want to limit that person with autism to just be one thing because that's what it says they're supposed to be. We want them to be what all that they can be. And we want their families, we want to limit that isolation that the families feel oftentimes when they have a person with autism, or even as some of the other things you said, with a mental illness or health emergency. We want to end that disparity, and, you know, we want to have these families flourish.
Yeah, I think that when I found out about it, I was searching or looking for, you know, organizations. It was actually really difficult to find ones that were specifically connected to the African-American community and autism. You know, there's a lot of these large ones, and I'm not saying that they don't help African-Americans, but, you know, if you look at their advertisements and, you know, photos and images, unfortunately, they're mostly white people. Nothing wrong with that. But as an African-American,
right,
you know, it would be nice to have somebody that looks like me and is going through similar issues and can kind of guide me, you know, give me a roadmap, you know, of how to deal with these systems and these doctors and so on and so forth so that I don't trip, you know, and fall in the development of my child. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And, you know, not focusing, not putting a focus in these communities of color is a tragedy because, you know, we have a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm an African-American woman. So there's a lot of stuff that I went through with my son and where they thought it was a discipline problem. You know, whippings are always recommended when someone's not paying attention. So we need to kind of back away from that and really understand what developmental delays are. You know, it's not boys are slow. It's there could be a problem there. It's not, oh, he'll catch up. It should be there may be a problem. So that's the things that we strive for. We go out into the community. We talk about early intervention. We talk about the signs of what autism, what could be autism, because I don't want to, you know, we tell them what it could be so they can get their children to the doctor. We also let them know that it's okay for your child to have autism. It's not a, you know, it's not a death sentence.
A death sentence,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not. I know that years ago when my son was first developed, I mean, I was pretty isolated and I was pretty depressed. I'm not going to say that it's not, but now I more often than you would think say, boy, go sit down somewhere. I say that a lot now. But, and that's because I've had him into therapy and I've had him in activities. You know, I've pushed for him to be the best that he can be. You know, and I don't compare him to anyone else's child. I compare him to him. And I let him do,
right.
You know how they say, I'm going to do me? He does him. And I want to have all parents to that point. So that's why we do parent trainings. We get into community groups. We go into churches and we talk to parents. And then we set them up with, you know, one-on-one parent training. We get people over to good therapy groups. And then even right now I'm talking to you from, it's funny, the Michigan Science Center, where we made the Science Center sensory-friendly, and it's right in the heart of the city of Detroit, so that these kids can come here and enjoy it. So we're doing sensory-friendly Saturdays here. So these are some
wonderful
of the things that we do. But one thing I want to double back on is that, like, go ahead.
No, I just want to let the audience know a couple of statistics about autism. About 1 in 68 children have been identified with autism spectrum by the CDC in the United States. It crosses all ethnic, racial, socioeconomic groups. It's 4.5 times more common among boys than among girls, but girls also can have autism. You know, about 1 in 6 children in the United States have a developmental disability between the years of 2006 and 2008. And as, again, we mentioned, this is a spectrum, so it can be very severe to very slight. One of the important things, though, to mention is that autism can be diagnosed very early. But the problem is having a doctor, you know, that is, I guess, educated themselves in, you know, what is autism and what does it look like. Can you tell us some little background about how early you said your son was diagnosed? What age was he?
He was diagnosed at 2, but I began the process for him right around 15 or 16 months because I saw some things that I didn't think were okay. And that was mainly because I had read up on what his developmental milestones were. And it's very important that parents know what developmental milestones are and where they should be at. And again, they will catch up is not a good answer. So I actually took my son to a genetic doctor who then found out he had, he was one chromosome over. So instead of 46, he had 47 chromosomes, which put him in like this gray area, not for fragile X. A lot of people have it and they're not affected. And she said to me, I think he has autism. She just said that. And she got me to a developmental pediatrician who then confirmed it at age two. And I was grateful to her because people thought I was crazy because my son made eye contact. He really liked ladies. He was friendly, but he didn't talk. And they just kept saying, he'll talk later, he'll talk later. Well, his talk later came at about four. So it didn't come, you know, at the expected couple of months later, mark.
Right.
And
right,
one of the things right. that you said, which I think is important, and I'm going to give you a little insight, is that I spoke at a pediatrician's convention in Washington a few years back, and they don't, regular pediatricians typically don't really know how to diagnose autism unless it's to a severity, because I may be explaining this wrong, but they don't spend a lot of time on autism unless they're going to be a developmental ped, unless
okay.
it's going to be their specialty, a practice.
Right. So that's the issue, because it can be, from what I've read, it can be diagnosed as early as 2 years of age, but most children aren't diagnosed until after four. And then they also talk about Asperger's disorder, maybe not till six. And so that's why it's so important to know and read about developmental milestones for your child and look at your child and see where they are. Now, everybody's child is not going to be right exactly there. At four, they're going to do this. At five, they're going to do that. That's, I don't want people or parents who are listening to think, oh, my God, my child's not doing that, then they have autism. No. You know, you need to calm down. Everybody is different, and some people blossom at different times. But they should be close, you know, they should be close. And that's another thing about a lot of young people having babies, young women having babies, but I'll say people because it takes two people to make a baby and two people should be there throughout, I hope, is that they're not aware of developmental milestones. And some people get mad at their children because they're not here. They're, you know, abusing them, if you will, to some degree, like trying to push them past the point where they should be or don't understand why are they doing this. And it's actually normal behavior for that age. So developmental milestones are important to know. I think this might be our other caller here, Angela Norris Hawkins. Hold on a second. Good morning. This is Joy Keys. You're on the air.
Hello, Joy. I apologize. I had some technical difficulties on my end. I apologize for being
late.
Oh,
that's okay. Okay, good morning. This is Angela Norris Hawkins. She's the co-founder of the African American Autism Center. I'm glad you made it with us this morning. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We were just talking about the knowledge of developmental growth and where people, where babies and children should be and how important that is. And Camille was discussing how some pediatricians aren't aware of that because they don't really spend that much time in schooling on, you know, being the specialized area, so that you could go to a pediatrician and they totally miss that your child might have autism, because it can be diagnosed as early as two, but that would probably be a specialist. Angela,
exactly.
Could you talk about that? Have you had any experience? Have people come to your center with, you know, the child not being diagnosed till five or a very late age?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've had that experience on my own. My son right now is 18, but he didn't get diagnosed until later. But I noticed some symptoms when he was around 18 months, 2.5 years old, and they misdiagnosed him at the time with an auditory processing disorder. And so he did not get fully diagnosed with the autism diagnosis until he was six. And so, yes, that definitely does happen. We have some families right now that have come in, and they know that there's an issue. But, again, their pediatrician is telling them, oh, you know, it may just be a slight learning disability, or it might just be a slight delay in their progression. You know, you might want to wait until he's talking, kind of, you know, those kinds of things are being told to our families. And so they are not being diagnosed until when they get to school. Of course, they can't interact with the teachers, at the preschool level, and so then that raises the questions. And so, yes, definitely that has happened.
Yes. Now, Camille, what are some risk factors in terms of, since you've had this foundation, what have you learned are risk factors for people having autistic children?
Well, in regards to what it can do to a life of an individual, to not be in therapy, to not have the things that they need to flourish, one of the biggest issues is that as an African-American mom, and I say this a lot, you know, whether you have a child on the spectrum or a typical black male, mm-hmm. he needs to know how to yield. Well, what happens to that person that doesn't understand what yielding means? Because he's going to go out in the world like, you know, I'm at a totally different place where I was, you know, 5 years ago when you and I started talking. So my son's getting older, and he's going to go out into the world. And African-American boys are always seen as more menacing than their counterparts. I don't know why. So what's going to happen when they get approached by the police and you've never readied them for the real world?
Well, I think you kind of switched my question around, but what you're answering is good as well. But that's okay. When they go out into the world, what are some risks they're going to deal with? But what I wanted to talk a little bit is risk factors for a mother having a child. And some of those are maybe being an older parent. You can be at risk for having a child born with autism.
You know what? I don't know.
Taking certain types of prescription drugs that are linked to higher risk of autism. What'd you say?
I think it's a roulette wheel because, honestly, Joy,
okay.
Every other week they come out with something. They come out with you being old. They come out with you being, I don't know. That's
not
my answer
taking,
because
not
they change
the right
it every
kind of vitamins.
Day. They change
exactly.
it every day. Like,
yes.
There was one about folic acid, people who didn't take folic acid. Well, I took folic acid throughout my whole pregnancy. My son still has autism. So everything they say, it changes within a matter of days. Sometimes in the same
right.
day, they'll change. So, I can't bank on any of that information.
Okay. Well, let me just tell the audience, this is from the CDC and just in general. Again, we're talking general and on a spectrum, if you will, that talks about occurs in people more often that have certain genetic or chromosomal conditions such as Fragile X syndrome or tuberculosis. Also, they're at higher risk if they have a sibling that has autism. They may also have autism. Again, this is not every person, but some people. And I guess in terms of research that's been done so far as of today, this is what they're saying. Angela, you were going to say something about the risk?
I was going to say that, I believe that it's all, like Camille said, it's a roulette wheel. But I believe it's environmental because I don't think it's just one thing. I think it's a lot of different factors that play into that, whether it's not, you know, women that are pregnant not getting screens or having the right type of health support. It could be that, you know, the medications that we're being given are affected our own bodies, which again transfers to our babies. So I think it's a lot of different things, but primarily for me, I believe it's environmental, because there are, to me, it's just certain pockets of the country where there's a more higher concentration. Why that is, I don't know, but that's why I believe sometimes that it's more environmental than anything.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, now
New Jersey's one of them.
New Jersey has a higher concentration of people.
I think New Jersey is
children.
Number one,
yes.
Well, you know,
and
there's a lot of factories around New Jersey.
Yeah, I was
going to
say power plants,
a lot of chemicals.
Factories. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now, Camille, let me ask you. When you first found out your child was diagnosed, what then did you do to help him? Where did you go to get help or get assistance? Was there some kind of, exercises or food to eat? Or what did you first do when you found out that your child was diagnosed with autism?
Oh, my goodness. I tried everything. I'm going to be totally honest with you. Anything that Google told me may work, I tried it. But ultimately, I found that therapy was the thing that he needed most, but my insurance didn't cover it because at the time there wasn't anyone to care for someone with autism who didn't speak and couldn't express themselves. So I had to stop working. So I had to pay probably about $2,000 a month just on therapy. for my son.
And now what kind of therapy? What kind of therapy specifically?
Applied behavioral analysis, speech, occupational therapy for his fine and gross motor skills. And it was pretty costly. I mean, I even took a course with Dr. Stanley Greenspan called Floor Time. I mean, I was doing whatever I thought I needed to do so that I could, in my mind at that time, change this autism because it just needed to be changed and fixed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Angela, how about your experience? Angela, what about your experience when you first found out? What was the first thing you tried to do?
The first thing I tried to do was to find out where there's some services available for children that look like mine. And I didn't find any. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And it for me, it was more of a cultural thing because I believe that how Caucasians approach an issue is different than how we would approach an issue. And so I really wanted to find and connect with families like me, and I didn't find anything. So
mm-hmm.
I just kind of ventured out into the world as Camille did with whatever I could do, researching online, just trying different techniques and different behavioral processes
and things like that.
And,
mm-hmm.
we definitely did go through lots of therapy, cognitive, behavioral, fine motor, all of that.
Now, can you, either of you, did you guys get an IDEA? Is that through your school? Is that something you either of you did? Or
I was able to get one. This is Angela. I was able to do that with a lot of advocacy, and
mm-hmm.
I actually had to hire an attorney because they were saying that my child wasn't that bad, that he didn't need that kind of service.
Mm-hmm.
That he would be fine just being in a mainstream classroom, when I knew that wasn't true. So, yes, we had to fight for him to have an IEP when he was in first grade.
Yeah, the IDEA is an act, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and basically I know a lot of public school systems, if you approach them to test your child either for mental disabilities or gifted disabilities, if you will, they have to act within a certain time period, and they also then have to follow through with giving you a plan of what kind of programs and services they can provide to that child. And this is at the cost of the district. You don't have to pay for this. The school district has to pay for this, and it's your right to understand that you can ask for that evaluation. And what I heard a lot of times is just what you were saying, Angela, oh, it's not that bad, don't worry about it, because the school doesn't have the money. They don't
exactly.
want to pay out.
Or they don't want to, as they say, waste time on, as they say, a lost cause, which to
right.
me, that was what I heard when my child was a 5.
Camille, how about you? Have you heard parents have that situation where they were kind of turned down, if you will, from their schools and had to go get a lawyer?
It happens a lot, but it happens more in urban areas. Well, I take that back because most of my constituents are in urban areas, and there is a terrible problem with that. I have not experienced it since I've moved back to my actual home state, because I think when you and I started, I was in Atlanta, and there was a lot of that in the Atlanta area. Not so much where I'm at now. But one of the things I want to point out is that I'm in Michigan, and the Detroit Public Schools notoriously denies IEPs, gets rid of IEPs, individualized education plans, and anything that is for the benefit of that child, they get rid of. And ironically, the person who was the director of specialized services for the district is now being indicted for taking money that was supposed to go towards those kids and buying a Maserati.
Oh,
that's amazing.
Wow.
So
that is crazy. Oh, my God.
That's unbelievable.
So now, are there medicine, Angela? We're just asking questions. Is there medicine that children can take to help with autism? Do you guys know of any medicines?
I'm not aware of any. Camille may know, but my children don't take any.
There are medications.
Have never taken any.
I don't personally recommend, because Respiridol is one that caused male breasts. Mm. So you have to pick one. You want them to have autism or, I'm not even trying to be funny, or breast.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Like, which one do you want?
Well,
I would take autism.
I want to mention to the audience, there's an early childhood technical assistance center, and this is through the CDC. The number is 919-962-2001, and you can call there for to find out information that's related to your state and how to get help. There's also a website. I'll try to tweet about that, ECTA website, and, you know, can try to get some help in your area. Now, Angela, what's your phone number? Talk about your phone number, your website. How can people contact your organization if they want to get help, and where you're located?
Yes, so we're located in Denver, Colorado, and our website is www.AfricanAmerAutism.com, and our phone number is 303-371-6022 or 303-335-5203.
And Camille, you do the same, please. Let the people know how they can reach you, where you're located, and so on and so forth.
Sure. We're located in Detroit, Michigan. Our website is www.thecolorofautism.org. You can email us at info@thecolorofautism.org. And our telephone number is 313-440-9035.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on and talking about, you know, your trials and tribulations. Is there anything else you want to bring up to the audience that maybe we've missed that maybe – parents need to look out for in this road dealing with a child that has autism?
From my perspective, I would say if you can reach out to other parents, if you are aware of someone in your school or in your church or in your neighborhood, reach out to them and become support resources for each other.
Camille, you have any other suggestions?
That's exactly what I was going to say, and I was also going to say look at grassroots advocacy, because there's a lot of small grassroots advocacies like ours, and we're there to
mm-hmm.
help families, and we're a lot closer to the families than some of the big organizations.
That's very true.
But like
Camille,
I said,
and I think
you.
We have more familiarity than celebrities because we're living it, and we're living it in a
right,
different way.
Every day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Without
mm-hmm.
money.
Yeah, you're right there.
Without
the
money.
Grocery store. Right, exactly. Well, I thank you guys for coming on and sharing your knowledge, and I appreciate the work that you're doing and helping African Americans, again, get through this battlefield, if you will. But as Camille mentioned, you know, try not to compare your child to other. Just you want them to be the best they can be. From where they're
Absolutely.
Jumping off from, and not feel bad that it's not a death sentence. Oh my God, my child has autism. What am I going to do? You know, oh my God, my child has autism. Okay, this is what I can do. You know, this is what I can do. This is what's possible, and this is what's available. And also, again, as I mentioned, you need to hold your schools accountable for the services that they are supposed to provide to you as a parent, and helping with your child. And even if your child doesn't have autism, there's lots of other services that school districts, you know, try to shy away from and giving children that can help them excel in the world. So don't be afraid as a parent to stand up to the school district. Thank you, Angela, and thank you, Camille, for coming on today.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great day, okay?
You as well. Thanks again.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with Camille Proctor. She's the founder of the Color of Autism Foundation, and Angela Norris Hawkins. She's the co-founder of the African American Autism Center. I really encourage you to reach out to these two organizations if you're dealing with someone, a child that has autism, or you know somebody who has a child with autism, and they can connect you with some services maybe in your area that are a little more cultural friendly, if you will. Thank you for tuning in. You can follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. You can become a fan on Facebook or look me up on Instagram. I hope you guys have a great weekend.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now, hopefully, my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.